She's currently recording.
Good. Yep.
Okay. Welcome, and another full room. This is really great. My name is Yvonne Hunter, and I am on the Community Advisory Committee for Valley Clean Energy Alliance. I live in Davis, and I'm going to be the moderator for today's workshop. Welcome. Is there any empty seats here? There's one over there, and you're welcome to come sit up here. You can be mayor for a day. This is the second of two community workshops. We had one 10 days ago in Davis. And what we're here to do is talk about BCE's net energy metering, otherwise known as NEM policy, and give you some background on what the existing policy is or was and why we put a hold on it, and talk about some options that we're considering, and then get your input. We are here because we want to hear your thoughts. Welcome. Please come in, and you can sit up here if you'd like. We're clearly, this is a hot location, not in temperature, but in subject matter. First, let me just give you a brief overview for what BCE is. BCE is Valley Clean Energy. It is, the technical term is a joint powers authority between the cities of Davis, Woodland, and unincorporated Yolo County. We are authorized by state law, we are authorized by state law after going through a lengthy process. Some of you may have followed it at your city council or board of supervisors meeting, on behalf of your residents and businesses, buy electricity. Instead of PG&E buying the electricity, BCE does it. PG&E still does the distribution and transmission, known as the poles and wires. And they also do the billing. And as of June, you are, unless you're an NEM customer, automatically enrolled into BCE. If you do not want to be part of the BCE, you can opt out and return back to PG&E. BCE is governed by a board of directors, two members from each city, Davis City Council, Woodland City Council, and Yolo Board of Supervisors, also advised by a community advisory committee. I'm on the advisory committee, and two of my colleagues are here. Christine Shoemaker, Marcia, where did you go? There we go, Marcia Beer. Woodland and Yolo County. All of the BCE board meetings and the advisory committee meetings are open to the public. You can sign up to be notified and get the agendas. You can come to speak to the meetings. So let's look at slide two. Who's doing this? There we go. This is our agenda. We're going to find out who's here. Come on in. Hello. Welcome. And there are a few seats, and you can also sit up here. You can be a city council member. We're going to talk about the goals and give you background on how we got to where we are. Look at the options that are under consideration. And then the bulk of the time will be for you to ask questions, provide your thoughts. We want your input, and then we'll talk to you about the next steps. So you all know who I am, so let's find out who's out here. We're not going to go by name, but let's do this. How many of you live in the city of Woodland? That makes sense. How many are from unincorporated Yolo County? Okay. Anybody from Davis? Here? Yay, all right. Anybody outside of Yolo County? Are there any solar contractors? hello. Anybody just interested? Does everybody here have, is everybody here a NEM customer with PG&E? You have rooftop solar, yes? Okay. Anybody not? Okay, good. So before I continue, we're going to hear a little bit from one of our board members, Supervisor Don Saylor, who is has been involved in this from the beginning.
And this does work. So we're going to talk about NEM. Before yesterday, I didn't know how to spell NEM. But I'm going to try today. Or maybe it's, remember that book, The Rats of NEM? So we're all here together to talk about that. I'm a member of the board of Balancing Energy Alliance. We did form about a year and a half ago, and our goal was that we would launch the program on June 1st, and that did take place. What we've determined, it's been very interesting to continue to assess the customer load and understand the needs of the ratepayers in our service area. Right now it's Woodland, Davis, and the unincorporated areas of Willow County. Sometime in the future it can be scaled up. Right now we have about 65,000, 66,000 total customers in the numerous three jurisdictions. Of that number, about 6,700 of them, including all of you, apparently, are already generating some of your electricity through your own solar arrays. So that is a larger proportion than any other clean community choice energy program has started with. So that's really interesting and great news, because it talks about the readiness of this area for moving into clean energy, renewable energy, locally generated electrical power. Because you're already pioneers in moving forward in relative terms to where the rest of CCEs have been at the start. Now, with that number of individual customers, we've really been hearing a lot of information from solar contractors, from individual rooftop, those of you with individual rooftop arrays, about specific kinds of contracts that you've got in place, and it's really become a very interesting circumstance where we want to be sure that what we do as your local community choice energy program is responsive to your needs and is the best kind of fit that we can move forward. So the value of a community choice energy program is that you get, we all have matters of choice. One of the matters of choice is that we're choosing to launch this program, and it's local decision makers are local decision making function. We meet in this room, the six of us, Dwayne Chamberlain, Angel Barajas, Tom Stallard, Lucas Frericks, and now Dan Carson from the city of Davis. We meet here in public. When we talk about rates, or we talk about goals, we talk about where we're going to buy the electricity, what the mix is going to be, whether we should at some point in the future launch some other incentive programs, whether we should invest in local generation capacity, all those kinds of questions are addressed in open public session in this room, in the county supervisor board chambers, or in the Davis City Council chambers. You can watch that, you can participate in that process. You can let our advisory committee that's already been formed know what your thoughts are about it. What we're doing here tonight is one of many of the opportunities to hear from you about how this affects you, what your preferences might be, and we're going to share some of the framework for decision making as it affects the net energy metering customer base. So it's exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. I know that Jim and Don and the rest of the team are interested in what your thoughts are. They've got a framework to present. We need to understand what your thoughts are about that framework. So thank you very much for being here. I'm sorry we're not in a little bit bigger room, but hey, when else did you get to be the mayor?
Thanks, Don.
Okay.
Before we continue, can I ask everybody please to mute your phones?
We're going to have to speak up because people are outside.
Okay.
So they need to.
We have a couple more seats
there's
in
one here.
Here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a popular hit.
There's one more seat up here.
One more seat.
Come on up.
Who needs to sit down? Okay. So let's go to the next slide. So these are the goals for today, this evening, to provide some background and information on what the NEM, is that better?
Okay. Yeah.
What the NEM policy is and why we're considering amendments to go over the options and then get input from all of you. A couple of key things to remember. First, there was a question in the Davis session, and so let me put this really loud. Someone asked, what is a truant? Because we'll be using that term. And for those of you that aren't too sure, right now you're a PG&E customer, and once a year you do what is called your annual true-up. And that is where they compare how much electricity you generated with your solar panels, how much you used, and the difference, either you owe them some money if you used more than you generated, or either they, I'm not sure if they pay you money or you carry a credit. Anyway, that's called the true-up. And it, with PG&E, it's done annually.
But isn't that the same?
Pardon me?
Isn't that the same as
no? No. We're going to come, you can ask questions during Jim's presentation and afterwards. For clarification and anything else, frankly, after. You're still going to get one bill. PG&E does the billing. You're not going to get two bills, so that remains the same. One of the things that's important for everybody to understand is for VCE, what we're trying to do is find the right balance between what is the most effective and easiest process for customers, balanced with the impacts on VCE, both administratively and financially. We could say we'll pay you $1 per kilowatt hour extra for every kilowatt you generate, but we would be bankrupt really quickly. So we're trying to find that right balance. The goals that we're trying to achieve in the new process is to make sure that no VCE NEM customer is at a financial disadvantage out of the box. And so we're going to look at a number of different options. So that's what we're trying to do. Jim Parks here is the Director of Marketing and Customer Care, and he's going to walk us through a whole series of slides. What I would suggest is that, if possible, hold your questions until the end, unless he says something that you don't understand, and then raise your hand. And our interim general manager, who is really, here we go, Mitch Sears, who's really good with the microphone, will go and take your questions. So, Jim, it's yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Yvonne. It is quite possible I'll say something you don't understand, but that's probably on me and not on you. Just want to give you some background of how we got to where we are today and why we're actually having this session. We went through a long process to develop the NEM policies for Valley Clean Energy. Just for clarification, NEM stands for Net Energy Meter. And I received, after we sent out the notification to folks, I received several emails saying, what is NEM? And so if you are here and you have solar, you are a Net Energy Meter customer, and you are a NEM customer. So we went through a pretty long process to develop our NIM program. We got input from the other community choice aggregators in California. We looked at what they were doing. We looked at what PG&E was doing. And we decided that the approach that we would take was we would put people on monthly billing, and everybody would have a single true update in April. So that was fine. The board adopted it. It looked like a good idea. April seemed like a good month to true everybody up. That was kind of the optimal month when kind of the usage versus the credits kind of merged at a good point. However, before we really got up and running, we were contacted by several folks, and one of them was a solar contractor, and he said, you know, there's a bit of an issue with your policy. Because there are some customers that if they go to monthly billing, depending on where they are in the cycle in the year when their true-up is, they may pay more during their first year with Valley Clean Energy than they would with PG&E. And so it took me a while to kind of grasp this concept. I'm literally on the phone with this guy, and I'm writing January, February, March, and I'm putting down dollar amounts for every month. And it took me a while, a little slow on occasion, and it hit me. He's totally right. There is a certain number of customers that are going to spend more on their first year of service with Valley Clean Energy. This is an issue that we need to address. And so we stepped back a little bit, and we started looking at, well, let me finish this slide. I'm going to get through some of these points here just to make sure. We also decided to pay customers 1 cent per kilowatt hour more than PG&E does. And that's not just at the end of your annual true-up. This is on a monthly basis. So if you've got your accruing credits, in essence, an extra penny compared to PG&E, when you finally get your true-up date, if you're an excess generator, once again, you'll get that benefit of the extra penny per kilowatt hour. And then here's what it looks like with the other community choice aggregators. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide, but if you look at the list, you'll see that most of them do monthly billing and a true-up in April. There's some that deviate somewhat from that. And so when we looked at this data and we talked to the different community choice aggregators, most of them said we didn't get a lot of feedback from the community, people didn't seem to complain too much, and it worked okay. Now, there were a certain number of customers that dropped off when they realized that they weren't being made whole in that first year, but that didn't seem to impact them. We kind of have a different approach. We want to support renewable energy in our service territory. One of the early benefits that we want to provide is to NIM customers, specifically. And now, admittedly, a penny a kilowatt hour may not seem like a lot, but for us as a startup company, it was one of the early benefits we wanted to provide to the community. So we stepped back, and we took a look at several different options. We took a look at our existing policy and kind of verified that, yeah, there could be some problems with that. We thought, well, what if we went April true-up and, you know, did something different? We could monthly true-up and allow our monthly billing allow people to true-up on their normal true-up month. There were some issues with that. Then we looked at what PG&E's doing. We looked at some various hybrids. And we kind of came down to, it seemed like the best approach for us would be to go with what PG&E is currently doing. Allow you to keep your true-up date and allow you to go on an annual billing cycle. So here's what it looks like. Now this is, take a look at the month of September. Here is a customer. And now some customers, higher, lower, it's going to vary. This is just an example. This customer trues up in September, and they owe PG&E $100 in this case. Now at that point, if they shifted to Valley Clean Energy and went on a monthly billing cycle, what you see is the charge is starting to add up. So by the time they get to February, they've in essence paid Valley Clean Energy $500 in this example. Now, that's kind of the problem. They just paid $100 to PG&E for the whole year, and now they're paying us $500. Now, it's just an example. It could be less, could be more. And so then they start accruing credits, and so as they roll into their second year of service, they've got $400 worth of credits, and in year two, they will only pay Valley Clean Energy $100. And so year two and on, you're kind of made whole, but you have difficulty overcoming the loss in the first year. I want to make sure this is clear to everybody before I proceed to the next slide. That makes sense.
And this is the problem with the existing policy for some customers, not everybody.
Yeah, and some customers come up, yes, sir.
So they're paying money because they're using more power than they've produced on any given month.
Yeah, on a given month. That's right. But the reason that it hits them the first year is because of our policy to change the true-up date. If we kept the true-up date the same as they had before, you wouldn't have this issue. Because we said the true-up date is in April. And so because of that, now you're starting to pay during months when you wouldn't have. You would have been carrying over a credit, you would have gone to your true-up date, and you would have had a final settlement. And it's only a first-year issue. So we've kind of moved to looking at what does PG&E do. So if you look at this example, it's the same numbers on a monthly basis, but you true up one time and you pay $100. And so this is what we're proposing for our program, is to match the PG&E program, to true up on an annual cycle, and you retain your existing annual billing cycle. And what that means for you is it'll be totally seamless. If the time comes when you roll over into Valley Clean Energy for service, you won't even notice the difference other than you'll see a line item on your PG&E bill that says Valley Clean Energy. Any energy you use will show up as a charge, and then you'll see a commensurate negative charge from PG&E. Basically, they credit you for the generation. And the credit you get from PG&E is greater than the charge that Valley Clean Energy is charging you. So you're saving money, plus you're getting the penny per kilowatt hour benefit. In addition to that, the customer basically remains whole, so you won't see any issues with first year service. So, yes, sir.
Going back just a little bit.
So since we're doing audio tape, this is going to be fantastic. No, that's right. It's fine. We're all here amongst friends.
maybe it was after the second year that if we had NEM credits, we still pay $100.
No, that would be, in this example, that's just the true-up. It's for a customer who pretty much is almost net zero. And over the course of an entire year, all they have is $100 in charges.
I have over $200 in credits.
Okay.
So I'm not going to be facing the true-up,
though. Well, if you're an excess generator, then you get paid for your credits. If you're a net user, then you pay. But it's only once a year where it's trued up. So you're looking at all of your annual, January through December, whatever your true up is, and all of those pluses and minuses sum up to give you a total bill.
Yeah, I have all minuses, so.
Yeah. And so what happens, what we're proposing is that you would roll over to Valley Clean Energy when you've been trued up with PG&E, so you basically start with a zero balance, and then you come to Valley Clean Energy, and you stay on the annual cycle.
Why don't we go through the rest of the year? It's a very good question. I think it'll be answered more clearly as we continue.
So when we realized we had this issue, it creates some problems on our end with respect to our billing system and so forth, and we can't just immediately transition into this. And so it's going to take some time for us to do it. So we went to the board of directors and we asked them to postpone them enrollment until 2019. So what that means to you as NEM customers is that you won't roll into Valley Clean Energy until your true-up date in 2019. So it's going to take us the entirety from January 1st to December 31st for everyone to become enrolled in Valley Clean Energy depending on your true-up date. And so the board asked us to do that, and then at the same time, the board asked us to hold workshops so that we could get input from the community. So we're presenting this information to you. We are looking for feedback from you as to whether or not this makes sense. But I want to finish the presentation before we get to that point, because there are some things that we have to consider. Once again, as a startup company, we need to consider our financial viability, and so we kind of ran some numbers on that also. So we've already talked about this, except for there's a slight modification we're proposing. We are proposing that we stay with your existing true-up schedule and an annual billing cycle. However, for customers that owe over $500 in a year, we're proposing that they go to a monthly billing cycle. but retain their existing true-up date. What that means is you won't see an increase in your payments over the course of that first year. Let's just say you owe $600, your average bill is $50 a month, and I know it wouldn't roll out that way. But in essence, you would be paying $50 a month rather than $600 one time in a year. And there's a reason that we're doing that. For existing BCE customers that install solar this year, so rather than send them back to PG&E, we're going to put them on our existing NEM policy, which is monthly billing with a true-up date in April. And so if someone installs solar panels, say in October, and they're an existing customer, they will stay a customer of Valley Clean Energy, but they'll be put on a monthly billing cycle. They would be able to transition once we have the new infrastructure in place to an annual cycle if that works better for them. So on the financial perspective, we ran some analyses to see what the impacts would be to Valley Clean Energy of shifting our policy. So if you look at the second line there, the second where it says all NEM to annual, the rolling cost to us of putting all customers on an annual cycle is $1.6 million. You see on the end there, these are in thousands. Then we looked at how many customers are paying more than $1,000 per year annually, how many are paying more than $750, and how many are paying more than $500 annually. So if you go down to the last line, and you'll see those that are paying $500 annually, the impact to us is about $900,000. What this means to us is it's like an accounts receivable. So what it is, it's an amount of money that we haven't collected but is still owed to us. So it has a financial impact on our cash flow. And so this is what we looked at when we said, okay, should we just roll everybody onto an annual cycle, or should we have some policy with it? We have some limits. And at this point in time, we've chosen $500 as the limit. That would be a mandatory limit for residential customers. Commercial customers would have the option to talk to us about it, and we could figure out if there's an alternative, because some commercial customers have plans to do it this way. They understand that the bills come in, and they're okay with that. So, yes, ma'am.
I want to put a clarification on that. When does that start? Like, if somebody's put on solar since their last true up because it's so high, it's going to go down.
Well, we actually have data. We have current data, and so we're going to look at the data and analyze it, and we will let customers know where they stand. I mean, if you're absolutely opposed to being on a monthly billing cycle, you do have the option to opt out and stay with PG&E. And so we'll analyze the data. Some customers we won't know, and so when you get to the end of the year and they have a greater than 500, then we would give them notification that we were rolling into a monthly cycle.
So it's not based on historical
year. It will be based on historical to the extent that we have that data. And so new customers coming on would be put on annual as a default, and then if they came and they had a higher than $500 bill at the end of the year, then they would be put on monthly. But once again, if you retain your true-up date, you're not going to be paying any more over the course of the year. You will just be paying monthly rather than annually. So that's it.
That's all.
Okay, that's not it. We're still here. No, yeah. I'm sorry, this is the time for your input.
Hello? All right. So let's try this again. Hang on for one quick second, because we will try to get to all of your questions. So if you have questions about explaining in better detail one of the proposals, or you have a general NEM question, we're happy to hear about it. We'd be interested in knowing, do you think this is a good idea? Do you think this is terrible? And the only thing I ask you to remember is BCE is trying to balance what works for you and what is financially and administratively prudent for us. The only key thing is, and that's why we put a hold on the process, is we don't want anybody in the first year to be ending up paying more money than they would have. And one final thing, If we do move ahead with either the process that Jim described or something similar in 2019, it will be over the whole year. So whatever your true-up month is with PG&E, that is when you would be transitioned into to VCE. So.
Great.
So with questions, again, since we're recording, we're asking people to use the microphone. I've got two, so what we'll do is we'll start over here with this gentleman, and then we'll move to the back. We'll make sure to get to everybody. Once that person's done with their question, go ahead and raise your hand again, and we'll just try to work our way around the room. So,
Eric, just speak 1, 2, 3.
Please speak right into the microphone.
Thank you. Does VCE allow a greater capacity on your system than PG&E allows? PG&E, when I set up my account through my provider, said that I could only increase my capacity by 10% over what I had purchased from PG&E the year before. Okay. So, if you understand the question.
Yes. And unfortunately, the answer is no. And that is governed by law and the Public Utilities Commission, or stuff.
Alright, so next question. Suppose on a bad month, I owe $500. If I owe $500 and I'm on a month and I pay my $500, and then on a good month, I overgenerate, and you owe me $500 because that's how the net process balances itself out. Are you going to cut me a check? When? So how does that money flow go back and forth? If I pay you when I owe you, do you pay me every month when I've generated more than I owe?
Not on a monthly basis. Now, if you're talking about on an annual basis, let's just say...
But I still owe my money on a monthly basis.
Only if your annual balance is greater than $500.
I understand.
So what would happen was if your balance is greater than $500 on an annual basis, not a monthly basis, that's when you'd be rolled to monthly. What would happen is you would pay for your usage, your credit would roll over until your true-up date. And if at your true-up date you are owed more than $100, we'll cut you a check.
And for under 100 on a monthly basis, it carries over to the next.
So if you had a credit of $500 a month, it would just stay there as a credit. It would offset your next month's usage until your true update.
Okay.
Does PG&E?
Go ahead.
I haven't been paying too much attention to the details when this started coming up, and so it escapes me. Maybe you said it earlier in the presentation. Why are we doing this? And what is the benefit to me? I have to be one of the ones that pay maybe a little over $500 a year. And so I miss why you even are doing this. Maybe you can explain that. And the other question I have is what is PG&E's position on this? Because I remember a number of years ago when SmutUp had come here, and everybody thought that would be the greatest thing ever, but PG&E was able to take a very aggressive action to stop it, and so it didn't go through.
Yeah. So I'll answer the first question about the why of it. And the why of it was built over a period of years by all of our communities as we examined what our goals are. One of the goals is to have lower customer rates. So the first year, all of those who already had the changeover to VCE have a 2.5% reduction in their rates from what they would otherwise be paying PG&E. So will all of you. In addition, you're going to get a slight increase in the 1 cent per kilowatt hour that you're producing in excess of what you're using. You get a higher payment at the end to true up than you would have got under PG&E. Those are the direct effects that you have. In addition, some of the customers in the area that we serve are not able to install solar arrays on their rooftops, but they want to have a greener portfolio, a renewable energy portfolio that is in excess of what PG&E can provide. So PG&E currently has a 20, if I'm getting these numbers right, 27%. What?
I think it's 33, yeah.
And we're at 42% the first year. So already there's a benefit to all of us as a collective. So that's the second benefit. The third is that we will be looking at a power mix that includes local generation. The first year, we had a contract with Indian Valley Reservoir, which has the turbine at that reservoir. Unfortunately, one of the county fire took out poles, so we're not going to be able to use that contract this year. It will take some time to replace it. But Valley Clean Energy had arranged a contract that PG&E wasn't willing to put in place to use local generation. That's a value to you. The other is, I don't remember the last time that PG&E held a discussion like this about how you rate that in Yolo County. I don't remember. Maybe they had it someplace else. You don't have to go to a Public Utilities Commission meeting in San Francisco and have a whole array of people in suits and talking about legal issues when you want to talk about the rates that you're going to pay or how our, what our goals are. So that's the why. I hope that that is helpful.
Let me touch on the second question you asked, and that was, what's PG&E's position and when SMUD wanted to, when there were discussions and we voted about becoming SMUD customers. This is totally different than that. Under the proposal of a number of years ago for us to become SMUD customers, that would have meant that SMUD would have just delivered and done the transmission for the electricity. That is not happening. We'll catch you. That is not happening here. The difference is that with community choice aggregation, and that's the technical term for BCE, we buy the electricity on behalf of homeowners and businesses, and the electricity gets delivered to you through PG&E's distribution system and the big transmission system. So it's a very, very different process. We'll catch you in a second when the microphone comes around.
Question here, and then the next one's going to be back over here.
In terms of the PG&E distribution service that they're going to give, will they charge us a distribution service fee?
They will continue to charge like they do now, or did before we started. You will pay those same kinds of charges that you did before. It will appear on your bill. The only difference will be where it says BCE.
Time of use. When the bill was passed, the legislation was passed that allowed community choice aggregators, they asked the industrial utilities to disaggregate their bill to basically show the generation charges separate from the transmission and distribution. So if you look at your bill today, you should see a transmission charge, you should see a distribution charge, you'll see other various charges and taxes and whatnot. You'll also see a generation charge. We're going to be the line that's going to be the generation charge. The PG&E generation charge will show up as a credit.
Okay, so I guess my question is, because PG&E is no longer benefiting, so to speak, will PG&E raise their distribution charge to try and, this happened in another state.
Yeah, they have to work their rate changes through the PUC and through a public process. I don't think they'll raise their rates just because of us, because that would show up on the radar of the different groups like TURN that analyze those rate processes. And I think if they saw something going up because of generation charges, they would really raise the flag on that.
Mitch, you've got a question over here. He's got a microphone.
My question has to do with the overall rate structure for those of us residential who are on a time of use setup of rates. Are those going to continue under BCE? And is that how you're going to calculate the extra 1 cent per kilowatt and all that?
Yes. If you're on a time of use rate, you will still be on the same time of use rate. You'll still get the 1 cent credit on your excess generation per month. And you'll still get 2.5% discount compared to the PG&E rate on the energy you use. And so we're basically matching all of the PG&E rates. There's very few that we don't match, and that it would be like a
economic development rate and some of the programs they have, like the Super Saver program, that we don't have an equivalent for. But all of the major PG&E rates, we basically match less 2.5% on the generation component of your bill.
So question here, and then the next question will be for you guys.
Hi, I'd like to know more about the information on behind the company. Can you tell me, I heard about why, but I want to know what is happening behind the scenes. Who is getting the salary? What are your salaries? I want to know whose property.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you
tell
can actually,
me all about
you
that.
Can actually go on our website. We are a not-for-profit, and so...
We're a public agency.
And you know, we're a public agency similar to like a city government or a local government. We're a joint powers authority, and that is, in essence, a government agency. So our board of directors is comprised of city council members, board of supervisor members, and so that's why we talk about being in a public forum. People can come and address the board.
And our employee salaries.
Yes, we have, four or five employees, and then a lot of the work is done by SMUD.
Okay, so go to the website and see how much your salaries are.
You can go to the website and see the employees in the description. I don't know if the salaries are there, but you can email me, and I will be happy to send you that information.
I think
can you give me an approximate? I'm not sure.
Well, three of the employees are actually SMUD employees, and so they pay, I don't remember. I'd rather take it offline, honestly.
I really don't like to know much about this company at all. And my first question was going to be why? Why were we created?
So we're doing this and why? But I think part of the discussion about the cost of Ellington Energy comes when we do our annual budget in public, here in these rooms. And at those points, any member of any of our communities or anybody else can come and see exactly what the budget is made of. And you can hear our discussions about how we allocate the funds and how we make choices about how to spend. When we're talking about the budget that starts out very first year, guaranteeing that everybody gets a 2.5% rate reduction, the reason that we're able to do that is that we're not paying shareholders, we're not paying a profit to the company. We're a public agency, everything's done in public, and people are, that we have a very small number of employees who work for Ellington Energy. I think it's three now, isn't it?
So there are a total of five people in our office. Two of those are technically employees of Ellington Energy. The rest are on loan from SMUD, or from, in my case, I'm with the City of Davis. I'm on loan to Ellington Energy. And so that's the way that our board of directors chose to structure to keep efficiency as high as possible and deliver values back to the communities as much as possible.
And I'm delighted that this question is asked. One of the things that really that we have kind of plowed new ground on in this example of CCA is that we have contracted for most of the back office functions to a proven energy providers, the Sacramento Metropolitan. We make the decisions. We're the policy group. We're here with you now, but we have the kind of the double bonus of having one of the country's leading public utilities doing that kind of stuff for us.
And what I can say too is that we are a very lean office. We could use some additional help. We're working hard. And we just decided we're just going to continue to work hard for the time being because we don't want to have excess staff and excess expense. The salaries are just commensurate with what the industry pays other utility workers, similar utility workers. And I can get you additional information, but I don't really have it off the top of my head.
I see. So basically this was created to save people money. And you're basically drawing a salary, though, doing that business, but you're also city councilman?
So the board of Ellington Energy is a joint powers authority. There are many joint powers authorities around that address different kinds of responsibilities. The Woodland Davis Clean Water is a joint powers authority. many of them, the Yolo County Transportation District that runs Yolo Bus, it's a joint powers authority. In both of those cases, the board members are elected officials who are who represent the jurisdictions that are part of them. That's exactly what we've got here, is that we have six board members from three jurisdictions, and we serve the jurisdiction and have an ancillary responsibility to the board members here. The board members for Valley Clean Energy do not receive a stipend or compensation for that service. But we do have paid staff to carry out the responsibilities necessary to perform the duty. I think the goals of the outline for Valley Clean Energy are to provide cleaner energy with local control and choice, and to do it at competitive rates. The way that we define competitive rates is to make sure that you're all getting in the first year the 2.5% lower rate. As we set out the PG&E rate structure, and this went right down the list, and what would the rate be if it was 2.5% less?
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I do agree that I do believe the monthly thing mirroring PG&E is the best idea.
Thank you.
Hi. So you mentioned the original intent was to put everybody on monthly billing, but because of the high cost to a few customers on that first year, you decided to stick with PG&E's formula of doing the annual. So besides that first year, can you just simplify it for us? What's most beneficial for us as the solar customers? Is it more beneficial to us to go on the monthly billing and maybe take a hit if we have to have a higher bill for the first year? Or is it more beneficial for us to stay on PG&E's?
That's a personal decision. You'll have the option. You won't be mandatory annual billing. If you want to go monthly, you can. It's more a function of, you know, a bill is coming one time in the year. Does it work better for you to pay monthly or pay annually? And it's going to be an individual choice. I can't tell you what's right for you without knowing your specific circumstances. But for most people, if you're paying like the less than $500, you're probably, I'm okay with paying once a year. And for us, we just kind of chose the mark of 500 that people will go to monthly. The benefits you'll give are the things that we've highlighted, 2.5% reduction in the generation charges for electricity and the penny a kilowatt hour for excess generation.
But you're getting that either way, annual or monthly.
That's right. That's right.
But you guys wanted to put us on monthly, so is monthly, I guess we have to look at our...
Well, from our perspective, the monthly improves our cash flow. So from Valley Clean Energy's perspective, monthly would be the way to go. And so we're shifting to the annual to provide the benefit to them customers, because a lot of them want to stay on the annual cycle.
At the Davis workshop, there were a number of people that said, even if I have the opportunity to go annual, I'm going to want to go monthly. And it'll be an individual decision how you go with it.
Question here and then in back. This may be slightly off the mark, but I've had solar for 15, maybe 20 years, and all of a sudden, PG&E came along and started charging me $9.80 a month to connect them to the grid. And so I wasn't thrilled about that, but I understand it was the state that passed something that PG&E talked them into. But you're going to keep the same $9.86 per month?
Yeah, that charge is a PG&E charge, not a Valley Clean Energy charge, and that charge will stay. That's a customer charge, and what their intent is to cover some of the costs of billing and so forth. And so if you're a net generator, say, they think we still need to recover some costs because we incur charges to serve you. And so that charge will not go away.
Okay, thank you. A question for that?
Your intentions and energy is very honorable. For all of that, I can tell it's really hard work going on here. You're interested in doing the water and the sewer too, are you?
I would direct that one to Dawn.
I'm asking, my question is, do you have future aspirations, or is this pretty much what you guys are always going to do, just going to keep doing this and that's about it?
Well, we do have aspirations to grow. Right now, we don't cover all of Yolo County. Winters and West Sacramento are not part of our service territory. And there's the potential to add them, and there's the potential to add other counties in the future. But once we're in the startup mode like this, we need to wait a year before we can entertain that and kind of, you know, get our feet on the ground, have a year of operational data that there's people that come and talk to us. So there's potential for growth.
But it's still with the same focus.
Yes, with the same focus that we have today.
Okay,
question up front, and then we're back.
On the face of it, it seems that from the customer's point of view anyway, it is a no-brainer to have a seamless switchover with the same annual true-up that we have with PG&E. Now, I understand that Valley is going to incur what you figure, if this latest proposal comes across, a $900,000 penalty over 3 years for doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's only if you switch to the monthly billing and so on for the over $500 customers.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So 90% of your residential customers are under $500 on an annual true-up basis. So it seems to me that the great majority of the funds that you have, if distributed throughout the year with, you know, month-to-month annual true-ups rather than all in April,
yes,
would have cash flow benefits for VCE.
Yeah, it would. You're saying basically we put everybody on monthly, but let you retain your true-up date?
Oh, no, yeah, we retain the true-up date. Forget about the monthly payment.
Yeah.
Your true-ups would be paid. You have, well, according to the chart that I saw,
yeah, okay, I
40% would come in the fall, 30% would come in
the summer. I clarified this with our director of finance. I said, okay, what does that number mean, that 900,000? And she said, that is, after we've been running for a couple of years, that is the rolling number that we are going to continue to carry, is basically 900,000. That is basically unpaid bills, but accounts receivable. And so it's not really a 1 year or 2 year number, it's just kind of an ongoing number.
Right, that's an expense that you're just going to always have in arrears.
Right.
That's a penalty, a cost.
Yes.
To VCE. However, there's a benefit to you guys, it seems to me, of having income distributed throughout the year instead of it all coming in April.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah, sure.
So you have, you know, yeah, you have improved cash flow.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
By doing what's best for the customer, VCE also benefits.
Another analysis we should consider.
What are you considering for out-year discount rate? So it's 2.5% for this first year. What are you looking at for years 2, 3, 4?
There's a lot of factors that go into that. But, you know, it just depends on what PG&E does with their rates. We don't really have a plan of going over 2.5, it's going to be 3, it's going to be 4, it's going to stay 2.5. We really don't know. It's going to depend on what PG&E does. And there's a lot of different factors that come into it. There's an exit fee that they have that could go up or down. There's, you know, they can change their rates. And so I can't really tell you exactly what's going to happen in the future years. But you're absolutely welcome to come to board meetings and participate and listen as these changes occur.
Not going up.
Yeah.
Not going up.
So let's see, where's the last thing? Oh, here's my question. Sorry, then it'll be up. Come on, gentlemen, a little bit over here.
Just see if I'm understanding something. So currently with the true up, you know, if I end up going at the end of the year, it's been based on the lack of production, if you will, so that it's 10 cents, 20 cents per kilowatt hour. If you end up with an excess that PG&E has to buy back, I believe it paid like 0.19 cents.
They're paying wholesale, yeah, and that changes every year.
Right, so my question then is, if you're doing it monthly, if you're one of these, you know, like, say mine was 14 cents last year, so if I'm going to be paying that, like in the summer months when I've been making way more than I'm using, am I going to be getting 1.9 cents from you, or am I getting it at the rate?
On a monthly, basis, you're getting the retail benefit plus a penny. But it's only at the end of the year where we'll pay you the same thing PG&E does, the wholesale plus a penny. But on a monthly basis, you'll be accruing credits that are retail credits that you'll roll over into future months.
But if I'm, I was working under last year, so you can put me on a monthly bill.
That's right.
So June, July, August, and September, I am demanding way more energy, producing way more energy.
That credit will continue to roll over to pay for the months when you use.
Is going to be kilowatt hours, it's going to be a dollar amount?
It's a dollar amount, basically, that you're going to roll over, but you're also tracking the energy usage. Because it depends, if you're on time of use, you're going to get like peak credit or off-peak credit or mid-peak credit. If you're on a standard rate, you're going to get some fixed amount, and that amount will roll over. So that if you earn a $30 credit in month one, that's going to roll over to offset a little bit of month two's bill.
But what's the $30 based on? That's what I'm trying to find out.
It's based on the retail value of the electricity that you generate.
So try to use like actual numbers to me. So let's say I'm paying 20 cents per kilowatt hour for what I use.
Yeah.
So I need to get 21 cents back on that?
That's right.
Perfect.
You'll get 21 cents worth of credit to go towards your next month's bill.
Okay, so that the energy is being paid at that amount that I would be paying plus the cent rather than the amount if I'm making excess over the year.
Right. The only time the wholesale value comes in is if you have an excess at the end of the year.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So my question is a little bit different in that I had solar and then I didn't have solar for a while and I just bought a house in April and now I have solar and I just started in April. I am not going to be able to be a NEM customer until next April?
You won't be able to be a NEM customer with Valley Clean Energy. You're a NEM customer with PG&E right now. Yeah, you won't be able to sign up.
So I've got a whole year I have to wait before I get that extra thing.
Unfortunately, yes.
Why?
We're trying to provide you an advantage, but at the same time, we're giving you a disadvantage by not allowing you to sign up.
But if I want to sign up now, I can't.
Remember, though, we just started, BCE started operation in June.
Right.
So it's not a whole year for you.
It's a lot of months.
Yeah, we don't have a mechanism to sign up right now. And it's not just on our side. It's also on the PG&E side. If you go on the BCE website, and you can opt out of BCE, but you can't go to the PG&E website and opt in to BCE. And so there's some things on both sides of the fence that make it difficult to bring you in right now early.
We'd like to, and we're looking into it, but the mechanics are really tricky.
So, question.
If for any reason a customer is dissatisfied, is it possible to opt out at any time? Is there a penalty to opt out? And how seamless is the transition to PG&E?
You can opt out any time, and there is no penalty, at least for the first year. Having said that, though, if you opt out after 60 days service with BCE, you'll be put on an interim rate that PG&E has. Now, this is done because PG&E says we have not procured power for you because you are a Valley Energy customer. It's going to take us 6 months to figure out what your usage is to procure power for you. So you're put on an interim rate that is, I don't know how to define it other than undetermined. And so you're put on this rate. And so after 6 months, you will shift from the interim rate to a normal PG&E rate. And so you can opt out any time. There are some varying factors depending on when you opt out.
And also, if you opt out and you decide you made a terrible mistake, you can come back in.
Okay.
And I should note, for those there, I don't use enough electricity to make it cost-effective for me to put solar on my house. So I've taken advantage of BCE's opportunity to opt up. And I'm now going to be getting 100% renewable. I pay a little bit more, but it was very easy on the website. So if your family and friends don't have solar, you can suggest to them that they just opt up.
So extra penny and a half a kilowatt hour or ultra green.
Just
one quick clarification on that one, what Yvonne said. If you opt out after this first 60-day window, you have to wait a year to come back to Battle of Energy. The basic idea is that PG&E and Battle of Energy don't want people gaming the system. Yeah. Right? So, we have a question up here, and then we have a question back here.
Given the antagonism of PG&E towards solar customers and the fact that they have tried repeatedly to raise so-called infrastructure charges, how will that affect things in the future?
You're still bound by some of those charges. I mean, PG&E can raise the infrastructure charges, they impact all PG&E customers. You remain a PG&E customer. It's just you're no longer a full-service PG&E customer. And the only piece that we impact is the generation piece. And so PG&E can still raise their infrastructure fees from, you know, $9 range to $20 range if the PUC approves it, and you would be on the hook for that payment.
So question back here, and then over here.
Yes, sir. I want to come back to the in months where we overproduce. Rate that we're going to receive versus the months where we use the one we produce. As I look through my PG&E month by month statement, in the months that I overproduce, PG&E gives me around 9 or 10 cents a kilowatt. And the months that I use more, they're charging around 20 or 30.
Yeah, and see, what you're comparing is a generation cost versus an all-in cost. And so if you look at this, like, I was working with a customer after the last workshop, and his inverter had broken, and he didn't know that impacted his PV generation. And so he went from a $1,200 annual true-up to a $3,000 annual true-up. And I did a quick calc of the energy cost. It was 26.6 cents per kilowatt hour. But that was kind of the all-in cost with your distribution and transmission. And so my sense would be that if they're charging you 20-something, that's the all-in cost of transmission and distribution. And the 9 cents is probably just their general charge.
It doesn't break out that way because every month they still got around $10 distribution charge.
Yeah.
This is separate. This is
totally and that's a separate thing, right? The $10 the $10 customer charge is just totally separate from any of your usage.
Question right here.
Yeah, so two questions. I think the first is a lot of people seem to have questions here. It always seems like it would be good to have the community sort of crowdsourcing our thoughts or whatever. Yeah. Is there some sort of forums or someplace where we can post and all talk with each other and ask and answer questions amongst each other?
We are going to be updating the solar page on our website, and with hopefully meaning all the commonly asked questions of this workshop and the one in Davis, and providing responses and information. So that's one of the ways that we'll be
I really like the comment that you just made, the question that you just asked. I think we should be creating a venue like that. Right now you can't access a Facebook page for Valley Clean Energy, and you can do the usual comment stuff there, but I think it's a really good idea.
I like the comment too. I think it's a good idea, but I don't know if we have a mechanism to do it beyond Facebook at this point.
Okay. So, question two. This one won't like. I have maybe heard through the grapevine that it seems like PG&E would love to move all solar customers to kind of day usage charges at some point. That to me seems like it would be disadvantageous in my particular case. You seem to be referring a lot to devising your future plans based on what PG&E is doing. Do you have any ideas whether you might be forcing that day usage upon all solar customers?
We won't force the rate on you in this case. Right now we're just matching PG&E's rate, so whatever rate you're on, that's what we're following. We actually have rate-making authority, but that is a huge effort. We don't have the staff to do that right now. Plus, it would be difficult for you as a customer to tell whether you're saving money or not. If we just totally offered you some different rate, you'd be going, well, is this better than PG&E or not? I have no idea. So for us right now, the easiest thing to do to prove that you were saving money was to save 2.5% off of the existing rate. So if PG&E at some point in the near future, before we make any changes in our own policies, put you on a time of use rate, then that's the rate you would be on, and you would still get 2.5% discount from that.
On the generation side,
though. Yes, on the generation side.
We do annual rate setting discussions.
Right. So
that's not necessarily going to be the case for all time.
Right. And that's right. The rates could change at any time. Who has the next microphone?
I have two questions. First one is the PG&E, the tiers are still air patrol, not yours.
Pardon?
The tiers?
Yeah, that's PG&E.
That's PG&E still? Okay. Yeah. I just want to state my case. I over generate, and I've been doing this for a decade now, and I spent countless hours talking to the people at the solar generation PG&E in San Jose. And those people really don't know what they're talking about. You can't get a straight answer from them. And I'm curious if other people have that experience, number one. And number two, if maybe we can have a forum about that. I had it for 10 years, and I'm still, I don't understand what my incentives are with PG&E. It appears that I have no incentives, because basically they don't pay me. I mean, I can't generate enough power in a month at the 2 cents a kilowatt hour or whatever, just to cover the distribution cost.
Well, I don't know how to answer that because I don't know, who else might have had similar issues. But I know there is a process and a mechanism they have for determining what they pay for excess generation. And I don't remember exactly what the wording was now, but it's some PUC process, and they go through some iterations before they determine what that rate is. You should get that wholesale rate every time. Like you said, it's something like 2 to 3 cents. How much do you overgenerate by on an annual basis?
It depends. I put up like 1,000 kilowatts.
Okay. Yeah.
But my point is that I hate to say it, but maybe I sound angry. I am. I don't. Every month, every year, I do something different to true up in order to try. I talk to them. They tell me. They tell me backtrack on what they told me. This year I burned every cent of power. I went into the red this year intentionally because it was cheaper to do it that way. But then in the end, it wasn't because they didn't explain it right.
Well, for 1,000 kilowatt hours, we'll give you an extra $10 beyond the wholesale.
So, question back here in the corner. Is this working? Because it's not on.
Hold on a little closer to your mouth.
This is a follow-up to the future of the rate structures and possibly being more than 2.5 to 4% or whatever it may be going forward. And the answer you gave, you mentioned a lot about what PG&E's plans are in the future. But since you're getting your power outsourced from SMUD, what if SMUD also has double their rates? Because they've always mentioned that they're 10 to 15 to 20% less than PG&E. So if they're 20% less than PG&E, and we're only getting 2.5% now, if SMUD all of a sudden raised the rates and also they're only 10% less than PG&E, how's that going to affect our rates?
Yeah, the procurement of really clean energy is totally separate from SMUD. We procure separately. We have a separate group that's procuring the energy, and so we are not linked to SMUD rates. If SMUD raises their rates, our rates don't go up because of that.
That seems an odd business proposition on their side.
Yeah,
they're raising their
actually,
rates.
They've separated
out, raise their commercial rates.
Yeah, they've separated out a group that is part of SMUD but not part of SMUD. I don't know how to say it, but they've really separated a group that is not linked to the core business of serving Sacramento County. It is linked to serving CCAs. And so that's what we're part of, and they procure the energy for us.
So just to be very, very clear, Valiant Energy could have contracted with any number of different providers for the services that SMUD provides. There was good mission alignment, they were cost effective, they knew what they were doing, they were local. Those were the basic points that our board of directors considered and decided to contract with SMUD. So in 5 years, if it's not working out with SMUD, we move on to a different contractor. So if there's really a very clear separation between SMUD and Valiant Energy, they are our contractors. End of story.
Yeah.
So, go back. Let's see. Sorry, it's right here.
It's okay.
There'll be a question back here, and then you'll be next.
Okay. Mine's going to be two questions, I think, and one here.
I'm a commercial solar generation facility. I have a battery pack that I put in the share. My PG&E bill now is 11 pages long.
Oh!
And I have proof, if you would like to look. Okay. To read it takes a rocket scientist. Okay, I'm 104% efficient. Will your meters change in our houses?
No.
So PG&E will still be gathering the information?
PG&E gathers the data.
Okay, so will I still be receiving an 11-page bill?
Yes, you will. And you should have one line item on there that says Valley Clean Energy when the time comes.
No, would you like to look at this?
No, I'm not.
When you do transition over to VCE, then it'll say Valley Clean Energy. But
so
until
all 11
then,
pages of this will say Valley Clean.
No.
Now, this shows generation distribution on peak, off peak, winter peak, summer peak.
Yeah.
There's a sample bill on our website that will show you exactly what your bill will look like. As them customers, you are not going to transition enroll in Valley Clean Energy until 2019.
Right.
So your bill is going to look exactly the same as 2019, depending on when your true update is. If it's in October, it'll be in October 2019, so on and so forth. So no, the bill will not change. There will be more information on there around Valley Clean Energy. And if that doesn't work for you for whatever reason, you have the option to opt out.
Okay. That was my question.
Which will still be 11-page bill.
Yeah, right. That will help.
But you'll still get the 11-page bill.
I'll still get it.
Did a good job on installing storage too.
That's what I meant. No, we
look close.
Go ahead.
Can you put the mic up?
No. Better?
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Mike Salazzo. Sorry I came in late, and I do have a little trouble public speaking. My thoughts tend to get scattered a little bit. I do have a couple of questions. I hope that they're not redundant. First question is, I'm not too sure what cost Valley Clean Energy is replacing from what PG&E costs are. For example, PG&E procures energy on behalf of all of its customers. So the energy is like the fossil fuel energy,
sure,
purchase power, I think. And then now Valley Clean Energy is going to be procuring energy on our behalf. So it's just the procurement part. We still have to pay the distribution rate component and parts of the generation rate component, public purpose program charge, and any kind of bonds and decommissioning fees that PG&E has to pay. Is that correct?
That's correct, but the portion of the generation component that PG&E still retains for customers of community choice aggregators shows up on your bill under a charge called PCIA. And so if you sum up Valley Clean Energy charges plus the PCIA, it's still less than the credit you're getting from PG&E. So all those are factored in to the 2.5% discount that we're providing. So the PCIA is in essence an exit fee from PG&E because they have in some cases procured energy on a long-term contract. And so it's only fair that they get reimbursed for those expenses.
Right. But we still pay like their capital costs for maintaining the infrastructure.
Yes, PG&E, those charges will still show up on your bills, transmission, distribution
costs. On those.
If you have an outage, you'll still call PG&E. So from that perspective, it's kind of invisible. You're still, you have an outage, you're not calling Valley Clean Energy, you're calling PG&E.
So we would be joining Valley Clean Energy. We would just have you as buying our energy for us. And is your argument saying that you buy energy at a lower price?
Yes.
Okay.
And we'll be buying energy from you too, in essence, as an end customer at the retail value.
Okay. Is there any, you said the piece, was it the PCIA charge or credit?
It's a charge.
If we join the CCA, will we pay the PCIA charge as well?
Yes, you'll pay the PCIA, but like once I said, if you add the PCIA plus the Valley Clean Energy charges, it's still less than the PG&E generation charge, which rolls back to you as a credit.
Okay, and the PCIA is reimbursing PG&E for the power that they would they generated or purchased on our behalf.
That's correct.
And at what time? Is this now or was this 20 years ago?
Well, that just they have a variety of contracts and it's a long and I don't even know what the process is they go through to calculate that. But it has to be approved in a public process and by the Public Utilities Commission.
Okay, and so do we know if PG&E's procurement costs are going down as they're procuring more renewable energy?
Well, we would expect the PCIA to go down over time, but it's just hard to say what's going to happen. These are kind of unknowns. I can't really answer your question directly because I don't know what the future holds with respect to rates or PCIA and those sorts of things.
There's a potential for the PCIA to go up, right?
Sure, yeah.
And we don't know.
Right, we don't know.
At this point in time, we don't know if it's better economically for a customer to stay with PG&E or go with Energy.
We do know at this time it's more economical for a customer to go with Valley Clean Energy.
And we could also ask, when's the last time you saw PG&E rate reduction?
Well, we probably won't see a Valley Clean Energy rate reduction, will we?
You actually might.
You might? How is that possible?
We do an annual rate setting, we're looking at different ways of structuring our rates every year.
Right.
And our objective is to always be competitive with the two. In this first year, it's 2.5% rate reduction. I think you've got some really good questions, and I think we can answer.
And the thing to remember is whether you're a NEM customer who's been transitioned over to VCE next year, or you're a non-NEM customer and you're already a customer now of VCE, you can opt out any time and return to PG&E. So that's we hope you'll stay with us, but you do have that option if you're on that. Any more questions?
Yes, there's
okay. More. Hang on, over here.
Comment on the question that was just asked. There's a reason that we're able to provide a lower rate. The reason is that we're not paying shareholders. So PG&E is paying shareholders, and a lot of the public discussion involves that.
I have a question about that because the procurement is a pass-through. There is no cost to the shareholder for recurring energy. We still pay shareholders for all the transmission, distribution, infrastructure, and all
this. What is the way that you're talking about?
The PG&E's customers, right? So is that not right, or how is that?
So the reason that we're able to provide a lower rate for your supply than PG&E is that PG&E does include a profit portion in all of their rate components.
Even if we join Valley Clean Energy, we'd still be paying that portion of the cost.
For the portion that's not energy supply, that's true. You've established that in your questions. There are multiple lines on your existing PG&E bill. The one that is going to be affected by Valley Clean Energy rates obviously energy supply.
But there is zero cost to the shareholders for energy procurement. That's my question. It's all pass-throughs. It's just an operation maintenance expense by the company that we're trying to replace.
Can I suggest that hold your question and let's have other people ask their questions, and we're happy to talk with you about that after the workshop. But we want to be able to hear from others as well.
Understood.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you.
So the question here, and then here.
And over here.
Okay, I don't know if you'll be able to answer this question, but when I signed up for, got my solar put on my house, it was back in March of last year. And they changed my rate from a regular rate to a time of use. Do they just, okay, you're getting solar, so you'll be this rate, and you'll be time of use, and you won't? If they do one, why would, because I'm hearing people that sound like they're not time of use. They're getting a rate like I used to get before I had solar.
I don't have the definitive answer on that, but I was always under the impression that a customer had a choice of either a tiered rate or a contribution rate. That may not be the case.
Well, if I did, I don't have to remember.
So it depends on if you're in 1.0 or 2.0. 2.0s are automatically defaulted in the time of use.
So that probably depends on the...
It depends on when you wrote in your system and you went live with it. So a question here, and then over here, and come over here.
You already have some long questions, but I'll try to get back to you. Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy about all of this. And I have solar, and I have electrical batteries, which I love.
Nice.
And I cook with a solar cooker, so I'm trying to do the best I can. I immediately thought, since you said I want local energy, I want to produce energy for you. Tell me what I can do, how I can do it. I've got a small farm, 37 acres. Takes some work to fit it in, but I'd like to know how and when. And I called you twice, actually. How can I produce for you? I'm local.
Yeah, there's a few things going on right now. The board is looking at their integrated resource plan and procurement plan. They would like to procure local, but there are a lot of issues with the land also, and Mitch knows this in more detail than I do. There's certain ag land that's off limits, there's certain land that is off limits, and so for one reason or another, and I don't know where your land falls into that, that it may not be, even if you want to put solar there, it may not be as easy as you think, and Mitch, I'd ask you to elaborate on that.
How do I find out? Is there somebody calling or not calling? Good. Thank you.
What's the benefit of local? Give us a call. Come on and see us.
Over here and then do next.
Could you share with us what you've learned from the other community power agencies that have been operating for a number of years about how has PG&E treated them? Have they punished them with rates? Have they tried to do other things too? Who knows what? But this is new here, so maybe just some apprehension. What have you learned from Marin and the others that you look into?
Yeah, Marin is the longest running community choice aggregator, and I would say in the initial years they were punished, and there was a move to try to put them out of business in essence. But what happened over time was there was actually rules passed by the Public Utilities Commission that said basically you can't bash each other. And so I'm careful when I go out and talk about PG&E. I don't try to bash them or anything. And so I actually have a weekly call with the PG&E rep. We go through questions and so forth. And it's a fairly friendly relationship. So things have changed from the early days when it was, I want to push out of business, I want to harm you, where we now cooperate to some level. PG&E definitely does not change their rates for community choice versus the rest of their service territory. When they do a rate change, it's the entire service territory. And so there's no indication that they don't respond to outage complaints because you're a CCA. They still have you on the hook for the distribution and transmission charges, and it's in their best interest to respond with good customer service. So from that perspective, there's no penalty from being part of BCE from PG&E's perspective.
There's a statewide association of community choice aggregation programs called CalCCE, and that organization has member support and ongoing dialogue. There's a lot of legislation that affects this activity. It's a state law that creates the opportunity for communities like ours to do it, and there's always some dialogue going on. So we are. I think there are about 14.
There's 18 total across the state that are operational right now, serving about 2.5 million customers. The estimates are, so just so to put all of this into context, the estimate is that within less than 5 years, more than 50% of the electricity in California will be served through one of these types of programs. We're the first program serving the Central Valley. But we're one of 18, as Don mentioned, across the state for this. Now, we will not say this is all sort of rainbows and everything else. There are headwinds associated with this. But the values that these types of projects or programs bring for those communities has shown that it can be successful. And so that's one reason.
I wonder if there was any chance at all, like I have a November true up. Is there any chance at all that we might be able to walk in the room?
We are working on, SMUD staff is the one that's working on the back office systems. And I have had that conversation, and it's undetermined right now. Our hope would be to take people on as early as possible, but right now our target is January 1st. So I can't tell you yes, it's more of a maybe.
How would we find out?
And we had similar questions at the Davis workshop, and there were a lot of people that were interested in the mechanics of the system, whether it can be done.
You get the notices.
Right. Yeah, when you're sitting down, you know, the postcards. Yvonne's going to go over the schedule in a bit, but we're looking for approval from the BCE board in September on the policies we adopt based on, you know, what I told you we're planning and based on the input from the community. And from both of the workshops, the feedback that I'm getting is this is the right approach, please proceed. I haven't heard anyone go, that's a totally dumb idea, you should do something entirely different. And so I think that's the direction we're going to go. Then we're going to ask for the back office stuff to be done. And so it won't be until September that they start to work on that. And so I'm not sure if they'll be ready in November to actually take on new customers.
Actually, it's been gratifying to hear people say, we want to join you sooner rather than later. So where's the next
question about sharing in the front?
Hi, hello. I would like some clarification on the billing and to the woman in front. I hope I never have an 11-page bill. But as I understand it, we will continue to get our bill from PG&E. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And there will just be an additional line item indicating PC.
That's correct.
And then so we send our payment to PG&E.
To PG&E, and PG&E will reimburse us.
Okay, and so, I mean, I see this as beneficial to the consumer that you only write a check, but how is it benefiting PG&E that they are managing your BCE's bookkeeping?
Say that one.
How is it beneficial to PG&E to manage your bookkeeping?
We pay for the services, yeah. So they bill, and we pay them a fee per customer per month.
The original legislation that authorized this laid out some very clear processes that made absolute sense and were fair for any of the services that PG&E will be providing to a CCA, like the billing. They have to recover their costs.
So a question up front and then back.
This is for Mitch.
Yes.
When you decided that prediction of 50% of the customers would be
served by one of these extra programs,
did that include the customers of the publicly owned utilities like SMUD and LAWP?
No, just the investor-owned utilities. So that's PG&E, Southern California Edison, and San Diego Gas & Electric.
My solar system is leased, so the only time I pay PG&E for power is during my true-up. I pay a separate company a monthly kilowatt fee. How is your system going to affect me?
That's a good question. It depends on your lease agreement. I think in general you should get the benefit, but I don't know what your lease agreement is.
And those that we've had, a number of folks asked the lease question, not just at this workshop, but at Davis and elsewhere, and a lot of it depends on, as Jim said, the language, and it may be that you might want to come check with us, show us the lease language, because it all depends.
Yvonne's volunteering for that.
Okay. You want me to stay as far away from numbers as possible?
Question up front.
What's on?
It's over close.
Yeah. My question was, you said that you're keeping the rate structure, so does that mean people who are on the care discount get to maintain the same level of discount?
Yes, yes, all those rates are covered.
Is there any chance it will get better for the PGE option?
Time will tell, we don't know.
So the one thing that I would add to that, thanks for the question, is that one of the objectives of this type of a program at the local level is to eventually build the financial reserves to be able to execute around local programming. So to your question, it could include a policy that could be set by the board that says we want to put some of those revenues towards low-income energy efficiency programs, or towards battery storage, or towards electric vehicle chargers, that kind of thing. So the idea is that not only are we saving our customers funds, but at the point when we're past sort of the initial startup phase and we start building those reserves, we're redeploying those as a dividend to the communities that we're serving. So again, we consider you to be our shareholders, and that's why we're returning those dividends back in the form of lower rates, but also in the term in the form of programs that we get input from you and from others about what those programs should be. One good example of that is Sonoma Clean Power, that's been up and running for probably 6-7 years now. They are executing around a program to incentivize electric vehicle charging. The idea that electric vehicles can help balance the grid when all this renewable energy is coming on, you need a place to put it. So the basic idea is that you're using battery storage in the form of a car to be able to help balance the grid that benefits the entire system. So that's what these types of local programs can do. It's different than PG&E or the other investor-owned utilities because they have to have a one-size-fits-all for their entire service territory, which stretches from Bakersfield to Oregon. These programs can be customized at the local level, taking the revenues that would otherwise be going to shareholders and others, redeploying them at the local level. Now, we will not overpromise. We need to crawl before we walk, before we jog, before we run. But that is the long-term view of these programs and one of the values that the board has seen as being something we want to deliver to our community. So, sorry for the bit of soapbox. We can't be up here. Yes. Okay, so come here. And let's see. Is there a little bit of questions? Right here. This gentleman here.
There's been some talk about inadequate grid ties to deal with, especially wind generation energy in the Bay Area. I know that I've been down there with only a third of those turbines are turning, and I wondered if you could address that. And also, there have been a lot of changes in the last year and a half in wind generation. There are small turbines that have become much more efficient. They generate very low wind speeds. Is that something that you have considered for the future?
Yeah, at this point, things like grid interties and so forth are going to more impact us on a secondary basis because we're basically procuring energy, injecting it into the grid so that we supply our customers. To the effect that there needs to be more transmission lines or things like that, that will impact the price that we pay, but we won't be directly involved with those types of projects. Having said things like smaller turbines and things like that, that would be what I would call maybe a day two exercise for allocating energy. As Mitch pointed out, any excess revenues we have, we're going to invest in local projects to benefit the community, and that's where we might look at some things like that. Or perhaps in a future solicitation for energy, we might request those types of energy sources. But all of these things need to be balanced from not just an environmental perspective, but also from a financial perspective. So to the extent those things are cost effective, we can certainly favor purchasing that type of energy.
So a question here and then over here.
I have a question for commercial customers. Will a virtual net metering be an option?
The what meter?
Virtual.
Get back on that. If you want to come and give us your name and email, I'll look it up and let you know.
So, to fill in, I'm here with Grid.
Virtual
she's a professional at this. And so what she's talking about is virtual net metering that's associated with when somebody doesn't own their rooftop necessarily. So an apartment complex, something like that. So it's a tough nut to crack, as you know. They do this for low-income housing primarily. These are the types of groups that we'll be hoping to work with to try to solve for those problems. Because the idea right now is that renters really can't access. I would say that if you want to ask how many property owners we have in the room, everybody's hand would have gone up. That's the way the system is built right now. And so there's not really been a good solution that's been developed. But again, having a discussion at the local level, I think you guys probably see CCAs as being part of the solution, I hope. And so we're open to the conversation. Again, we don't want to overpromise, but that's something that we would want to work towards. To really open this up, not just to those who have the resources to have homeownership, but also to those that are in principle as well. So,
it would also open it up to those that have a small house, homeowner, don't use enough electricity, but still want to support it to buy into virtual net.
So, question over there, and then.
Yes, I'd just like a clarification on what you pay us for the excess. You said it's 1% higher. Is that 1 cent retail higher or 1 cent wholesale higher?
If you have excess at the end of the year, like you're an excess generator over the course of the year, we'll pay you wholesale plus a penny. So a penny more than what PG&E pays. In fact, we will look at what PG&E pays and use that number and then pay a penny more than that for kWh.
Cash, correct.
Depends on how much. If it's right now, it's over $100 as a cash. If it's less than $100, it rolls over as a credit.
Okay, question here.
This is slightly off the subject, but I was listening to Comedy Central on Thursday, and Trevor Noah was saying that he was making lots of jokes about the heat. And he said, it's so hot that even Japan is starting to paint its streets. I've been thinking about this for 25 or 30 years. My house has been, and my barns are white roofs. And I immediately called city managers of Woodland Davis Winters. And I've heard back from everyone at Davis right now, and we just got back from a vacation. They are interested in this. And one of the byproducts of this, and I'm hoping that this will be part of what you're doing and thinking about, is that people live along these streets, the ambient temperature is 22 degrees higher than it is normally because of the streets. And by painting them white, this goes down by a great deal. And it means that people are using less electricity with their air conditioners. Also, their heat disease, et cetera, people from heat strokes and so forth go down. Just Google Los Angeles painting streets white and look at a few things, and there are a couple of good articles, and this should be something that we talk about, plus solar cooking. It's something that would save a lot of energy. There could be a lot of things in a local company like this that make a great difference. And even if a neighborhood, if Woodland or Davis would allow this, where a neighborhood could get together, put in a little bit of the bill, and get kids involved, get temperatures, get schools involved, it could be incredible, and it doesn't just have to be something that is academic and that just is a bill or whatever. I don't care what you charge me, I want to be with you. So there we are.
Thank you. And good suggestions. These are things we're looking at, what we can do in the future with excess revenues. And then, you know, we're trying to think of things that we do that are like low costs initially, and then moving up higher costs as time goes on, and pretty much everything's on the table.
Do that to you, or do we have to stay on time of use?
Yeah, your rate will be determined by PG&E. So if you're on a time of use rate, you can call them and ask if you could go to a tiered rate if that's what you would like. Our rates are basically linked directly to the PG&E rates. So we're offering, once again, you know, 2.5% less on the generation component, but the rate is still a PG&E rate. And so if you want to shift your rate, you would need to call PG&E and ask them to shift it for you.
So we are a group that came
get on until 2019, the end of 2019.
Yeah.
But you need revenue, so if I understand this correctly, if we went to buy a month, could we jump on faster?
That is still to be determined. I'm working with SMUD to find out if people want to come on and go monthly, if they can do that right now. And I don't have an answer to that yet, but we're hoping by the time the board approves the policy, we're planning to send a letter out to all of the new customers, and I hope that we'll have that information by that time to say, if you want to go monthly, you know, you can sign up right now. I can't say that yet.
How many more questions? We want to make sure we cover everybody.
You've exhausted everyone.
Yes.
Earlier you said
we take the wrong one.
Earlier said that the electricity from Indian Valley Reservoir wouldn't be coming in for, I don't know, 6 months or something because of the power poles. How did you make up for that? I assume you were planning on using that as of June 1st.
Yeah, it's not a big power plant. So it wasn't really difficult to make up. We have contracts right now with Pacific Northwest for wind and for hydro, so it's very clean for us. But we're in the process of procuring additional energy, and it wasn't. We just started that contract, so I don't even know if we had any energy delivered when the poles burned down. And so we were still on track to procure what we needed for our customers.
Okay. This has been great.
You know, I will tell you guys, you kept us longer than Davis did.
You know, that's great question. So let's go to the last slide. One more question.
Yeah, you guys have a phone number?
Yes, we'll give you the phone number, absolutely. Yeah. Let me just quickly go through the next steps so you understand it, and then there'll be phone numbers and emails on the last slide. So we have just concluded our second community workshop. Staff is going to digest everything, and you had one board member, and there have been now 1, 2, 4 community advisory committee people sitting in on the two meetings. Fine. The community advisory committee is going to discuss all of this at our meeting at the end of August. Staff will be providing an analysis and on the recommendations. The VCE board, which meets in September, will likely consider, assuming the time frame works, recommendations from the advisory committee and staff and make a decision in September on what variation of the discussion, the options that we talked about. If they make a decision, then the goal will be that, as we discussed before, in January to begin enrolling NEM customers based on their existing PG&E true update. We will be looking into whether or not it is possible to let people join us sooner. It's really cool that everybody wants to be part of our family sooner. So the goal is that all NEM customers, except for those that don't opt out, will be enrolled with us by the end of 2019. So, as I said, next slide. Here we go. Want to push this one? Okay, good work. Thank you for participating. This has been a great conversation. If any of you have already signed up online to receive notices about meetings, you don't have to do it again, but you can enroll, sign up now. If you haven't, you will get notices from about the board meetings. You'll get them about the advisory committee meetings,
If you are a NEM customer, we already have your contact information, and we will be either emailing or mailing you with updates. I encourage all of you to check in periodically on our website, because we will be updating the NEM information. We're going to upload all of the slides here. We are going to be expanding the solar page and including a lot more information. We'll probably, hopefully sooner rather than later, update our exceedingly now outdated FAQs to answer a lot of the questions that all of you raise on the nuances on NEM. So with that,
if you'd like, my email address is jim.parks, P-A-R-K-S, at valleycleanenergy.org. My phone number is 530-446-2753, and I respond to my emails and I respond to my calls. So,
yes.
Once again, jim.parks at valleycleanenergy.org.
Can
you
get a phone number? It's not on the screen.
Yeah. My phone number is 530-446-2753.
Jim.
Okay, thank you so very much, everybody, for coming. And we hope to see you as part of the DCE family very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
I almost came off the ground.
Okay, that's probably what it is, so your term date will probably be in March. Which means you'll roll around a little bit quicker if you're interested in staying in the valley.